Oral questions by members.
Leader of Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, we continue to hear stories of seniors, the frail elderly, and their families who are concerned, they're confused, and they're worried about getting their vaccination. Many of them have not left their homes. They have not been out in their communities since the pandemic began. And now they are afraid that they will need to travel to get their vaccination. Yesterday, we raised that very issue about the community of Hope, and we were relieved. And the mayor of Hope and his constituents were also relieved that they would have a vaccination clinic in their community. In fact, the premier made a commitment, and I quote, "I have every expectation that the residents of Hope, particularly in phase two, will not have to travel to get immunized," end quote. So that was good news, and it was a relief for the residents of Hope. Can the premier confirm that he followed up on his promise and that he gave clear direction to the health authorities across the province that vaccination clinics will be located in communities all across the province so that seniors will not have to travel to have their vaccination?
Premier of British Columbia.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for her question. I did follow up with the Minister of Health yesterday after question period, and it is clear that in phase two, those who are unable to travel will not be required to do so. The plan starts by going to independent living facilities. It goes to those people who have home care already, people known to the ministry, people known to the health authority, to get their first shot in that phase two cohort. As we move into phase three and phase four, the largest immunization program in Canadian history will be underway, and it will require extraordinary efforts by volunteers, by members of the legislature, by people all across British Columbia. It's my expectation that those that are leading this extremely challenging file are going to do everything they can to reduce anxiety. And again, I just want to touch on the member's premise, which was we're all pretty frightened about all of this, but certainly those who have been in their homes for the past number of months, they want to hear definitively that they will be safe going forward, and I can give that assurance as we go into phase two. When we go from there, that's going to require a whole bunch of other work by a whole bunch of other people. I cannot guarantee, as the minister or the member wants me to, that every community will have a vaccination center. But I can commit that those in phase two, the particularly elderly and frail, will have access in their community.
Leader of Official Opposition, supplemental.
Well, thank you very much. And I do appreciate the Premier's response. Most seniors at home today don't know about phase one or phase two or phase three or anything else for that matter. What they are worried about is ensuring that they have an opportunity to be vaccinated in their communities. Yesterday, the Premier made an explicit commitment. Seniors will not have to travel to get immunized, end quote. Well, another day and another community. And I'm very surprised that the member from North Delta hasn't actually stood up and raised this issue, the very issue that Mayor George Harvey raised with exactly the same issue as Hope. In a letter that he made public, Mayor Harvey points out that North Delta is currently not being considered for a vaccination site. The letter goes on to outline that they are willing to do whatever necessary. The Premier talks about people being willing to step up. Mayor Harvey has said that his staff has searched the community. They're willing to do whatever is necessary. And he said a vaccination site in North Delta is essential. Here is the ask that the mayor has, and I quote, "I would respectfully ask that you consider a Delta site to serve this population." So yesterday, the premier made a promise that seniors would be vaccinated in their communities. So today, will he ensure that the residents of North Delta have a vaccination site for seniors? And frankly, will he please give clear direction to health authorities so that day after day, we're not bringing another community expressing concerns and fears about their frail elderly citizens?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. The member said at the start of her question that seniors don't know the difference between phase one, phase two, phase three, and I accept that. But every member of this House should know the difference between phase one, phase two, and phase three. And the official opposition was briefed thoroughly by the Minister of Health, by the immunization team, with the express purpose of reducing anxiety in communities. Mr. Speaker, I'll get to the point the member made, but I think that the preamble is critical here. It is important that all of us work together to explain to British Columbians an extremely complicated situation, that is happening not just here in British Columbia, not just here in Canada, but indeed around the world. So if our objective, Honourable Speaker, is to reduce anxiety, I suggest that we collectively put our shoulder to the wheel and work cooperatively to reduce anxiety. With respect to the particular request by the mayor of Delta, we'll take that under consideration, but the member will also know that if you live in North Delta, you are right beside Surrey. It is a different community, but it is the same community for commerce,
members,
for shopping, for social interactions.
Order,
maybe a geography lesson, Honourable Speaker. Perhaps a geography lesson would be in order here.
Okay, we'll resume the question period after you are finished heckling each other. Members, come to order. Member for Surrey White Rock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today, the coroner revealed 165 opioid deaths in January, the largest number ever recorded in the month. That follows the heels of 2020, which we tragically saw was the worst year ever. I'm going to read a quote. Why is our provincial government unable to meet the needs of people and families desperate to find help when it comes to the opioid addiction? Those are the words of the Premier in 2016. And sadly today, they ring truer. Can the Premier tell us why the budget for the Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions is the smallest in his government?
Minister of Mental Health and Addiction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The calamity of the continued overdose crisis combined with the effects of the pandemic are leading to increasingly heartbreaking loss for people in British Columbia. And on behalf of the province and the government, we extend our condolences to the families and friends of those lost, and our thanks to those working on the front line, working very hard to save lives. It's been a very hard year. As the coroner pointed out in her report last month about the 2020 deaths, the effects of the pandemic, border closure measures that have led to increased toxicity of illicit street drugs, coupled with increased isolation and more people using drugs alone, especially as supervised consumption sites and other services had to minimize their operations for safety reasons, has led to a terrible combination. That is what we are fighting, that my predecessor and this government brought in measures, as the coroner acknowledged, that in 2019 led to, for the first time since 2012, to a drop in the number of overdose deaths from illicit drugs, does say to us that we must work even harder, that what we were doing, and in fact the first 2 months of 2020 before the pandemic hit, overdose deaths had dropped. And so our government continues to be all hands in all ways, adding nurse prescribers, expanding enormously access to safe supply, opening new treatment and addiction beds just 2 weeks ago. And in fact, just in 2 days, we're going to be announcing new youth treatment beds in Kelowna in cooperation with Interior Health, a doubling of youth treatment beds for the first time in BC's history. There is more to do, and we are determined to do it.
Thank you. Member for Surrey White Rock on supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the fact is this, is that the Premier's office has a bigger budget than the Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions. The Premier spends more money on government advertising than he does on this minister's budget. That is why critics are calling this a failure. The Premier said, and I quote, "When someone needs supports, they can be stuck on a wait list. They should not be forced to navigate the yawning gaps in BC's treatment services. Addictions don't wait." I agree. To the Premier, if he meant what he said, will he commit today to increasing this ministry's budget?
Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member opposite for his concern about the overdose crisis. I do wish he'd had a hand in shaping his own party's election platform in October, at which point they pledged only 25% of what the elected government did for mental health and addictions. But good ideas can come from all sides of the House, and I look forward to the members' support for our commitment at in the forthcoming budget, where we are again, for the fourth year in a row, contributing unprecedented dollars towards fighting the mental health and addictions crisis. Every year, $2.7 billion from my colleague, the Minister of Health's budget, goes directly into mental health and addictions. We've contributed $746 million over 5 years alone, starting in 2017, to combat the overdose crisis. And that has led to new services that the previous government, in the 16 years they had the ability to build these in, did not. 100 new adult substance use and treatment beds, new foundry centres across the province, and an enormous expansion of prescription alternatives or safe supply, and also medication-assisted treatment in cooperation with nurse prescribers and so many hard workers on the front line. We are doing the hard work, and I look forward to my colleagues' support for more.
Leader, Third Party.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. We can't turn a blind eye to the unequal impacts of this epidemic if we are not actively anti-racist in our pandemic policy development. We risk compounding the systemic racism that has long existed in BC. As was just reported in the Vancouver Sun, quote, "The consequence of the race-based data gap has been especially stark during COVID-19. Public health officials have been unable to definitively say whether racialized groups are infected with the virus at higher rates." And as my colleague from Saanich North and the Island notes in that same article, if you don't ask the questions, you don't collect the data, you become colorblind to the nuances of the way policies are affecting outcomes for different people. My question to you, Honorable Speaker, is again to the Premier. In June of last year, he wrote to the BC Human Rights Commissioner and requested her advice on how to move forward with the collection of race and ethnicity-based data. Yet 9 months later, no work has been done on the suggestions put forward by the Commissioner, meaning we have no data capable of informing our vaccine rollout plan. Why has this not been a priority for the Premier?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker, and thank you to the member for her question and for her interest. As with all pandemics and with all serious diseases and ailments that face people, they're profoundly affected by what we call the social determinants of health, by income, by ethnicity, by race. Indeed, all of these things play a role. Every case is important, and every case is followed here in British Columbia. And that's why we've engaged in the program that we are engaging in, to immunize those who are most vulnerable first. That includes, because the evidence shows this, our elders. In the case of this immunization, those in long-term care is why we comprehensively immunized long-term care and assisted living. It was based on the evidence. It's why we are providing immunization in rural and remote Indigenous communities because of the vulnerability of those communities to pandemic. It's why, with respect to Indigenous people, We're immunizing 65 and above during the period in the general population. We're immunizing 80 and above. So our policies have been informed by who's been affected. Our policies and direction has been informed by the concerns of regions and by people, because every case matters. Every single case matters. We take it all, as you can imagine, very seriously, both at the Provincial Health Office, the Ministry of Health, and throughout the government. Can we do a better job in future? Yes. But I think that our Provincial Health Officer, Dr. Bonnie Henry, our Deputy Provincial Health Officer, Dr. Daniel Ben-Smith, the Premier and others have been very concerned about these very questions and responding to them, and you see that reflected in our immunization plan.
Leader, third party.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And the Health Minister does indicate that decisions are being made using data and evidence. But they're being made by the data and evidence that's being collected. Let's look, for example, at Manitoba. Yesterday, Manitoba released a report showing how COVID-19 has disproportionately impacted Indigenous, Black, and other people of color in the province. Why was this possible? Because Manitoba started collecting race-based and socioeconomic data in May 2020. What does the data tell them? Despite being 35% of the population, Manitobans who identified as Black, Indigenous, and people of color make up over half of the total of COVID cases in the province. This is not a naturally occurring disparity. It is created by policy. The disproportionate impact of COVID-19 is systemic, and it is seen in every jurisdiction, according to Dr. Brent Rusin, Chief Provincial Public Health Officer of Manitoba. It's not about people in communities making bad choices. COVID-19 infections are largely linked to pre-existing inequities, including housing and employment, factors impacted by government policy. My question for you, Honourable Speaker, is to the Premier. The best time to start collecting and sharing disaggregated data was a year ago. The next best time is now. The Premier has directed his ministers to apply an anti-racist lens in their work. Will he now commit to collecting and sharing the data that will ensure that the ministers will have accurate information to be able to determine how COVID has exacerbated inequities in our province?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, we know, because every case matters, that COVID-19 has affected people differently in the province. First of all, our elders, but also in other communities. Some communities have seen a profound effect, both as regions and as communities of people. And so we have taken action to address that. It's why you see such a diversity of languages in our advertising and our reaching out to people, why we've continued to do the work that we need to do to keep everybody safe. In June of this year, the member will know, as part of our anti-racist commitment, we launched a commission into racism against Indigenous people in healthcare that provided a comprehensive report in 5 months that we are acting on. All of the recommendations, because these issues should be central to what all that we do. These issues affect all that we do, and we're going to continue to do everything we can to ensure that those most vulnerable, those most affected by the COVID-19 crisis, are provided protection. That's seen in every part of our immunization plan, and it's seen in all of our efforts to try and reach out to communities and provide the maximum protection possible. There is no question that people's circumstances make them more vulnerable to having COVID-19 transmitted to them. And people's circumstances mean that the impact on it is greater in some communities. We saw and we see, for example, in some of our lowest income neighborhoods in BC, the actions taken by public health to protect people, those systematic actions. I'm very proud of those, very proud of those communities, and very proud of the actions taken. Again, can we do more? You bet we can. Will we do more?
Thank you,
yes,
Mr.
We will. But I think the task and the job that we're doing now reflects our commitment to the very issues the member raises.
Thank you. Member for West Vancouver, Capilano.
One of the Premier's excuses for breaking his word and calling a snap election was the need to pass mental health legislation. But we've seen nothing from this government on the topic since. Parents continue to knock on the minister's door asking for help, but no one seems to be home. Can the Premier confirm when he will be reintroducing legislation to support youth with mental health challenges?
Minister of Mental Health and Addictions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nothing is more important than keeping children safe. The stories that I've heard from about families trying to access mental health services and addiction services when their families were in crisis are heartbreaking. As Dr. Bonnie Henry has said, when our government took office in 2017, there was no systems of care. And so we have been building one at the same time that we've been fighting an overdose crisis and now a COVID pandemic. The legislation, Bill 22, brought into this House last summer, is something that I'm still talking with stakeholders about. And we will not be introducing it in this year, but we absolutely need to deepen our, we are actively deepening our commitment to providing services for young people, doubling the number of youth treatment beds, opening virtual foundries across the province, a virtual foundry which anybody in the province can access, and opening physical foundry centres for youth and young adults, a fantastic way for people to connect. And we're determined to build more. Whether there is legislation to come alongside with the increased services is something I'm looking forward to hearing from families and stakeholders about.
Member for West Vancouver Capilano, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under your watch, wait times remain long for youth needing support. When a young person needs mental health help, any wait is like having no service at all. Trying to negotiate entry into the system is costly and time-consuming. And the small amount of money the Premier chooses to put into the Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions goes to salaries, not people struggling with addiction. So again, to the Premier, he told British Columbians a Safe Care Act was vital. When will he be introducing the latest version?
Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That the member opposite, where they actively took money out of the system, they did not create a Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions. It's really too bad that we have had to fight so hard under this term of government to build a system of care up and save lives, because that system was completely neglected under the previous government. Already, in just 4 years, we have reduced wait times for young people accessing mental health services by 21%. It's not enough. There is more to do. In August, we opened 20 new youth beds in a new treatment center in Chilliwack. We've expanded an adolescent psychiatry clinic at the new Mental Health and Substance Use Wellness Center at Royal Columbian. We launched a new 24/7 mental health access system for post-secondary students, something that was spawned out of a terrible tragedy in my own community at Vancouver Island University. Thank you to the student movement that pushed hard for that. And we have heard from families that the system remains difficult to access, and there is more to do. I hope we can work together on expanding even further the $2.7 billion budget that comes from our government into direct mental health and addiction services for British Columbians.
Member for Vancouver Colchina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's almost 3 years ago now that we asked the government to implement a prescription drug monitoring program. It's been used very successfully elsewhere. It reduces opioid deaths where it's implemented. A year ago, the then minister said it was being implemented in this chamber, sitting in her chair in that corner. Since then, silence. Since then, 1,700 British Columbians have died of drug overdoses. So when will this government implement a prescription drug monitoring program that it's been working on for 3 years, that it promised to implement a year ago, and in the meantime, 4 British Columbians die every day?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, and I think the member would have listened and heard the Minister of Mental Health and Addiction talk about our fundamental commitment to keeping people safe. And that includes changes we've made through the colleges of physicians and surgeons to improve protection from the abuse of prescription drugs across BC. I think those actions on the prescription drug side, actions in terms of treatment, actions in terms of safe supply, represent a very significant response to what is a crisis for everyone. I think the member would agree that linking the number of deaths to a particular aspect of the question is not the way to go about it. A comprehensive response is. That's why we have a Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions. And that's why we're taking steps at every turn, working with medical professionals, working with pharmacists to make the system safer. It's safer today than it's been, and we're continuing to do that work into the future.
Member for Vancouver Colchinan on supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Minister of Health knows his file. The Minister of Health just provided an answer which did not address the core question at all. He skirted around it, he avoided the topic, because he has completely failed to work with the College of Physicians, the Nursing College, and other prescribing entities to implement a prescription drug monitoring program. It doesn't exist in British Columbia. It's been talked about for years with no results. So this is a critical time in which to look for results. We're all horrified to get this wretched number coming out every month. This month, January, we had 5.5 deaths every day. These are mostly young men going home, taking a pill, and dying in their own beds. This is a societal disaster. And we have been asking for 3 years for this government to do a very fundamental thing, to work with the medical profession and other prescribers to implement prescription drug monitoring to prevent addiction. What happened to prevention, Minister? Let's get an answer on when, not if, but when we're going to get a prescription drug monitoring program.
Minister of Health.
I'm very surprised that the member would diminish the extraordinary work being done between the Ministry of Health, the health authorities, the Colleges of Physicians and Surgeons, the Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions, to ensure the safety of prescription drugs in province and safety of their utilization. The changes have been and continue to be extraordinary. And I think just diminishing it, just calling out names and suggesting work hasn't been done, it's just not the case. He will know that that work is extensive. I would be happy to have provide him with a briefing with BC PharmaCare and in concert with the Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions to do just that, so that he can see the work that's been done, see the effort that's been done, and see the work that's involved, not just me and others, but have been involved the entire community of doctors and nurses working on these very questions. It's going to take that community and the broader community as we respond to the crisis and the heartache and the pain of our overdose crisis in British Columbia. We're going to continue to make those efforts at every turn, whether it's taking actions against what have been abuses in the past by pharmaceutical companies, as we are in some of our legal actions, by expanding access to treatment, by ensuring appropriate and proper prescribing. All of these are aspects of the problem, and I know the member is concerned with these issues, and I would be happy to continue to work with him to see that we get the best possible results for people.
Thank you. Member for Surrey South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it was the worst January ever for opioid deaths. 165 people lost their lives. Yesterday, the member from Abbotsford Mission said, and I quote, "In my own work as an MLA, it has been the mental health toll of COVID-19 that I've seen impact my constituents that has hit me the hardest, especially amongst young people." Mr. Speaker, she's right. It brings to mind the sad case of a Langford family who got a call finally setting up an appointment with a psychiatrist 3 days after their son went missing and was found dead. To the Premier, when will he provide the promised support for those suffering with mental illness and addiction?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the member for Surrey South for her question and the reference specifically to a family, a grieving family in my community. But it's not just in Langford, it is across the province, and we're all aware of that. And I appreciate the work of the member for Vancouver Colchester. I appreciate the work of all members of this House to bring awareness to the challenge so we can destigmatize it and take proactive actions. I support certainly the Minister of Mental Health and Addictions. I support the Minister of Health. The billions of dollars that this government and previous governments have put in to try and stem this societal disaster. But it will take all of us, not just today, not just next month, not just next week, but for a long, long time coming out of COVID to focus our energies on making sure the right people get the right services. Question earlier to me on that very question. That's what I said, and that's what our intention was when we created the ministry. The ministry's budget is the size it is. The amount we spend is significantly higher. I'm certain that the Minister of Health and the Minister of Mental Health and Addictions would love to walk the new members on all sides of the House through how that funding is undertaken. But to focus on the societal disaster is all of our responsibilities, not just the minister, not just families who are grieving, but everyone in our community. And I know with absolute certainty that 87 people in this place are committed to that. If we keep our shoulder to the wheel, keep focused on that, and have respectful dialogue as we've done today on this important issue, we will make the progress that all of us demand, not just now, but in the future.
The balance question period, Government House.